जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोधानंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यशोधनंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यशोधानंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यशोधानंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरावनचारी, तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Narayanam namaskritya. Naram chaiva narottamam. Devim sarasvatim vyasam. Tato jayam udirayet. Nashta praishya padreshu. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Bhagavati uttama shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Hare Krishna, good morning. We are reading and continuing from Canto 2. We're on Chapter 1, text number 15. And today we're going to read the text and purport, and or half the purport. And tomorrow we'll continue with the other half, since it's quite lengthy. This is the correct verse. I'm in the wrong chapter, excuse me. Antakale tu purusha. Antakale tu purusha.
Antakale tu purusha.
Agate gata sadvasa.
Agate
gata sadvasa.
Chindyad
asanga
shastrena.
Chindyad asanga shastrena. Sriham dehe nuyechatam. Sriham dehe nuyechatam. Antakale tu purusha.
Antakale tu purusha.
Agate gata sadvasa.
Agate gata sadvasa.
Chindyada sanga shastrena. Chindyada sanga shastrena. Spriham dehe nuye chatam. Spriham dehe nuye chatam. Please chant. Antakale tu purusha.
Agate gata
sadvasa.
Chindyada
sanga shastrena.
Sriham dehe
nuye chatam.
Antakale tu purusha.
Shastrena.
Antakale, at the last stage of life. Two, but Purusha, a person. Agate, having arrived. Gata sadvasaha, without any fear of death. Chindyat, must cut off. Asanga, non-attachment. Shastrena, by the weapon of. Spriham, all desires. Dehe, in the matter of the material tabernacle. Anu, pertaining. Ye, all that. Cha, also. Tam, them. Translation. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it, and all desires thereof. Purport. The foolishness of gross materialism is that people think of making a permanent settlement in this world, although it is a settled fact that one has to give up everything here that has been created by valuable human energy. Great statesmen, scientists, philosophers, etc., who are foolish without any general information of the spirit soul, think that this life of a few years only is all in all, and that there is nothing more after death. This poor fund of knowledge, even in the so-called learned circles of the world, is killing the vitality of human energy, and the awful result is being keenly felt. And yet, the foolish materialistic men do not care about what is going to happen in the next life. The preliminary instruction in the Bhagavad Gita is that one should know that the identity of the individual living entity is not lost even after the end of this present body, which is nothing but an outward dress only. As one changes an old garment, so the individual living being also changes his body. If this change of body is called death, death is therefore a process of changing the body at the end of the duration of the present life. An intelligent person must be prepared for this and must try to have the best type of body in the next life. The best type of body is a spiritual body, which is obtained by those who go back to the kingdom of God or enter the realm of Brahman. In the second chapter of this canto, this matter will be broadly discussed, but as far as the change of body is concerned, one must prepare now for the next life. Foolish people attach more importance to the present temporary life, and thus the foolish leaders make appeals to the body and the bodily relations. The bodily relations extend not only to this body, but also the family members, like wife and children, as well as to society, country, and so many other things which end at the end of life. After death, one forgets everything about the present bodily relations. We have a little experience of this at night when we go to sleep. While sleeping, we forget everything about this body and bodily relations, although this forgetfulness is a temporary situation for only a few hours. Death is nothing but sleeping for a few months in order to develop another term of bodily encagement, which we are awarded by the law of nature according to our aspiration. Therefore, one has only to change the aspiration during the course of this present body, and for this there is need of training in the current duration of human life. This training can be begun at any stage of life, or even a few seconds before death. But the usual procedure is for one to get the training from very early life, from the stage of brahmacharya, and gradually progress to the grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas orders of life. The institution which gives such training is called varnashram dharma, or the system of Sanatana Dharma, the best procedure for making the human life perfect. And we will pause today at that point in the purport and continue with that purport tomorrow. Om Agyana Timuram Vasya, Vyanjana Shalaka, Shakshana Vipanina, Tasmai Shri Guru Maha, Nama Om Vishnu Varaya Krishna Vishnaya Bhutle, Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Sam, Kanani Namaste Sarasati Devi, Vyavam Vishayu, Nirvisesha Shunyavadi, Prasitadi, Shatari, Vamsha Kampai, Vasya Kripasam Yuvi, Vishapati Tanam, Bhavan Yuvi, Vaishnavi, Vyonimo, Maha. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death. But one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. There's a story my dad was telling me in regard to this verse and this subject of cutting off material attachments in order to prepare for death. And he said this story was actually told by Mahavishnu Goswami in Alachua a few times when he would come, often 10, 20 years ago. So once Narad Muni, he told Krishna, he said, "Dear Lord, you're not being fair. There's so many devotees of yours, and they want to come back to you. They're ready to come back to you, but you're not accepting them back into your home in Vaikuntha. You're not allowing them into your dham. Why don't you allow them to come here? It's so rare to have this opportunity, and they're so eager." Krishna says, "This is not true. Nobody's wanting to come back to me. I'm waiting. I'm here. I'm waiting. So who really wants to come back to me?" And Narada Muni says, no, I go all over the place. I see this. I'll bring one to you. I'll show you." So Krishna said, "Sure. Go ahead." So Narada Muni, he went around looking for a ripe Vaishnava. And he sees a nice Vaishnava, Kuntimala, Tilak, Krishna Shams from the Ki, Krishna Balaram, Ki, Sri Sri Gonita, Ki. He sees a nice Vaishnava with Kuntimala Tilak chanting. He's outside of his home. He has a nice home, obviously a family man, the children, fairly well off, pious. So Narada Muni, he approached him. And this man very humbly got down. He greeted Narada Muni and said, "How can I serve you, Narada Muni?" And Narada Muni said, "I'm here for a certain purpose. I want to take you back home, back to Godhead. I want to take you to Vaikuntha right now. Come, we're going right now." And he was flabbergasted. "Right now? Yes, let's go. But Narada Muni, my wife will get upset. I can't just leave right now. And not only that, my daughter is getting married soon. Let me at least enjoy that much. Let me see her get married and then come back and I'll be ready to go. I have responsibilities. After all, I'm a family man." Okay, Narada Muni agreed. He came back. He said, "How long will it take?" Six months maximum. Come back, and I promise you I'll go. I want to. I'm a Vaishnava. This is my goal." 6 months later, the wedding was finished. Narada Muni comes back. The man was there, outside of his house, doing his bhajan. So, Narada Muni said, "Let's go. Come on. We're ready." No, not yet. She just got married, and I have the good news that she's having a baby. So please, just let me have one grandson. Let me see the grandson. And then after that, I'll be ready to go. Please, Narada Muni. How long will it take? 9, 10 months and a few months of enjoying the baby. And then I'll be ready. Come back next year." So patiently, he comes back the year after. Kind of see the trend where this is going. The next year, Narada Muni comes back. And a little frustrated. "Okay, it's been a year. Come on, let's go. I'm giving you this opportunity." "But Narada Muni, the baby is just so cute. He's just so adorable. I have to wait till he's old enough that he can say my name and recognize me. And he can start talking. And then I'll be ready." So, Narada Muni fed up, he left. And when he came back, he heard the old Vaishnava passed away. But instead, there was a dog at the front of the house. This dog was that Vaishnava. He took birth again as a dog. He was so attached to his family, to his home, to his possessions, that he took birth as a dog in front of that home. Narada Muni. Narada Muni, being such a merciful Vaishnava, doesn't give up on the devotees of the Lord. He still offered this opportunity. He says, "Look, you're in the body of a dog due to your attachment. But I can still, even now, I'm giving you this offer. I told Krishna, I'll bring a devotee back, so come back with me." No. See, my sons, they're very negligent. And all this I worked so hard for in my previous life, they're not taking care of it. So at least, as a watchdog, as a guard, I can guard this property from thieves. And Narad Muni was in shock. He's still attached in the dog's body from what he created, what he so-called created in his previous life. And so one day the dog entered the house, and in traditional culture, you know, Vaishnava families, especially in India, a dog doesn't enter the house. So his wife, meaning from the previous birth, no idea who this dog was, beat the dog to get out of the house. And so the dog was bleeding and crying, and Narad Muni sees this dog. He says, "What happened?" And he said, "What happened?" And he said, "Okay, last chance." And totally fed up, the dog, who was once the Vaishnava, said, "You don't have another household, another person to bother? You come back to me time and time again? Please, go away." Just like that. Material attachments turn away what was the greatest opportunity, now a wasted opportunity. Pious life, Vaishnava family, comfortable enough, material situation that you can practice Krishna consciousness comfortably. But the attachments increase so much that, well, this didn't hit the opportunity. And so, even though this Vaishnava, Narad Muni, the mercy of the pure Vaishnava was given, it was rejected due to attachment. And it made me think that, yes, the story is a little humorous, you know, it's stressing a certain point quite a lot, but at the same time, it's also quite relatable. If I were to, you know, at least speaking for myself, Narad Muni came to my door and said, "Right now, we're going." What would my reaction be? What would your reaction be if he came to your door and said, "We're going back home, back to Godhead right now. No time to grab your thing, no time to tell anybody, finish any unfinished business. You're ready, I see you're ready. Let's go." Would you hesitate? Would you not hesitate? What would come to your mind first? Who would come to your mind first? Would it be Krishna? Would it be I finally get to see him? So Srila Prabhupada, he has given us this opportunity to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. That's a very bold statement. Very, very bold. Often do you hear in this lifetime you can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. We hear how long of a process it takes, how many years of tapasya it takes, how many lifetimes it takes to come to a point where you can go back to the spiritual world. But in this lifetime, but are we willing? That's what this story indicates. Are we willing? Are we completely ready to give up whatever material attachments we have because we're so internally attached to Krishna that attachment trumps any other attachment we have? So in this verse in particular, saying one should be bold enough to not be afraid of death and cut off all material attachments and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. So it makes you reflect, where are my attachments? Which direction are they heading? Of course, we're not on the path to negate all material attachments that have no attachments. We're on the path to become attached to Krishna. So we fall somewhere in the middle. Are we going in the right direction? Are we becoming more and more attached to Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas? Or becoming more attached to, even in the name of the Vaishnavas and Guru and Krishna, we're becoming more attached to the material things that come with certain aspects of being in the material world. So this topic of death is so relevant and it's so relatable. It's the only shared experience we have with every other living entity on any planet in the material world. It's the only shared experience. All thing we have in common is that we will also all die one day. And it's extremely relatable, extremely relevant also, because even especially in the last few years, death has become something more prominent with war and disease, and more people that we may have known who may have passed away in our life in recent years. I remember when I was in university, I wanted to help with the campus Krishna club, a service I wanted to help with and be involved in preaching a little bit. I was a student at UF, and so I asked my spiritual master when I went over to Europe, I said, "What is a good way to reach out to college students. How and what mindset or what method, and broadly he says you should be, well, they want something that's relevant to them and they want something that's relatable to them. And Krishna consciousness is both of this, but how you present it to a certain audience, be relevant, must be relatable. And so when I was reading this verse, I was thinking this is the most relevant and relatable topic, but it's not necessarily the most relishable topic. It's quite grim, but it's very, very important and very pertinent. The death is thought of as being depressing, but for a devotee, for a spiritual seeker, death is actually liberating. And that's what Srila Prabhupada focuses on in this purport, that the modern person, the atheistic person, the materialistic person, likes to shove it under the carpet. Like it's not going to happen, or downplay it, or not think about it. But the spiritual person takes the opportunity. He sees. He recognizes what is death. He understands, he defines what it is, and he works towards it. In fact, from the beginning stages of life. And devotees, and you see devotees who pass away, there are difficulties, of course. There are attachments that have to let go, but so much practice over the years, there's also an element of excitement that's not always there with non-devotees when they leave their body, because they don't have the knowledge and practice. I remember when Shankar Prabhu was leaving his body a few months before, maybe 5-6 months before, and his body was still a little bit healthier. We're asking him, are you afraid? You know, what's going through your mind? He goes, I'm excited. I get to see Prabhupada. You know, there's this element of excitement for Vaishnava when death arrives. And I remember when I was younger, I used to think that devotees are so pessimistic talking about death and misery all the time. And when I came to realize more, it's not so much pessimism. It can be if we only focus on what's coming up and not the solution and not the positive aspect of it. But really it's very realistic and very optimistic in a sense. I want to dig into this purport just a little bit because there's so much packed into it, and Prabhupada gives a nice flow, if we break it down, of understanding this topic of death and defining it and really how to take advantage of the present situation, knowing that death is coming. The first thought that comes to mind is that Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear, ignoring your problems won't make them go away. Procrastinating won't make your problems go away. So procrastinating the problem of death, which we all have to face, will not make death go away. And he says here that how most people ignore this problem of death. And he says that, you know, we think we're making a permanent situation in this world. Although it's a fact that everyone has to give up everything that's been created by valuable human energy. This is great statement. Scientists, philosophers, etc., who are foolish without any information of the spirit soul, so without the right knowledge, even though they have a great title, a great education, think that this life of a few years only is all in all. Think it's everything, and that there's nothing more after death. So there are those who don't have the knowledge to understand what's coming up after death. There's also those that choose not to think about what comes next. And yet the foolish materialistic men do not care what is going to happen in the next life. There's a phrase, ignorance is bliss. If you ignore something and you just don't think about it, then you're in bliss. There's out of sight, out of mind, no problem. That's another materialistic mentality when it comes to death and not accepting it. So further on, Srila Prabhupada first defines death. If we're going to accept it and be bold enough, as the verse says, to not be afraid of death, we have to understand what it really is. And reading this, it seemed almost, well, of course, this is the definition of death, but if someone doesn't have the understanding that after death, the body changes into another body, if someone doesn't have the understanding and you ask them to define death, what will they say? Is the end of life, end of this life? End of? It is not a clear definition. So without understanding what really the problem is, how can we work towards a solution? So Srila Prabhupada first gives a nice definition. So, as one changes an old garment, so the individual living being also changes his body. And this change of body is called death. Death is therefore, here's the definition, a process of changing the body at the end of the duration of the present life. Very simple. And this is a lot seemingly less scary. Just another process that's not the end, but is just a transitionary period. And so he says, an intelligent person, first he talked about those who didn't understand the concept of death, but chose to ignore it. Now, an intelligent person must be prepared. Once you understand this definition of death, you must be prepared for this and must try to have the best type of body in the next life. So if you understand that it's just a transitionary period of a change of body, then the mentality shifts entirely. You don't want to ignore it. You don't want to be scared of it. You don't want to create temporary solutions because you know it's just a transitionary body. Or transitionary period. If I'm just going to the next body, then what should be my mentality now? Well, then what's the best body I can get? That's the automatic question that comes. The best body that one can pertain, the best type of body is a spiritual body, which is obtained by those who go back to the kingdom of God or enter the realm of Brahman. So, what do we do? Now, if we understand this, we understand the goal is not to become, have a spiritual body in the next life because death is just a transitionary period. Later on, the Purport Prabhupada says, one has only to change the aspiration during the course of this body. So with this knowledge, you have the knowledge of what death is, what the next body is, what's coming up. How do we achieve that? We just have to change our desire, our intention, our aspiration. And to do that, training is required. If our goal and aspiration is to achieve a spiritual body in our next life, we just have to have some training. Accepting the reality, the job at hand, and then we can train and be prepared. Just like if we were, you know, to have an aspiration to change our career, for example. That's something on the mind of myself and people in, of my generation, age group very much. Career, what do we go into? So first, find the aspiration. What is it you really want to do? What is the goal? What is in your nature? And then once you accept that, accept what you would be good at, what you want to do, what's the job at hand? How can we train and be prepared? So just like that, we do this all the time in our day-to-day activities. We should also be able to do it for death, for what the soul is going to go through next. Not the soul, but a body, and the soul will go into another body. And at one point that really stuck out to me here in the purport was this nice analogy Srila Prabhupada gave of sleeping. So you can kind of catch the flow here. He's talking about what is it like if you don't understand the concept of death, what is it like if you understand the concept of death, and how do we understand it if we can't remember our prior lives, we can't remember this experience. We can only see it in the lives of others, but we can't actually experience it. But if we have some sort of, you know, those who have, for example, near-death experiences, often there is the element of faith that's solidified after that. You hear with either Vaishnava, non-Vaishnava, devotee, non-devotee, whatever, there's a near-death experience, the mentality totally changes because they understand there's something so much more. They came so close to the end and they realized what a reality that is. But without that experience, the reality doesn't become so strong in us. So our faith in the process to transcend death doesn't become so strong because we haven't experienced it. But what if we can have some sort of idea of what it's like? So after death, one forgets everything about the present bodily relations. But we have a little experience of this at night. Every single night, we have a little experience of death, so to say, or this forgetfulness period. While sleeping, we forget about everything this body and body relations, although this forgetfulness is temporary situation only for a few hours. We forget about everything that happened in the day. We're seemingly unconscious, seemingly, for a few hours. So death is nothing different. Except for a few hours, it's a few months in order to develop another term of bodily engagement. So it can be seen the exact same same way. And if we understand that, yes, we sleep every night, sleep every day, it's very a natural, simple process, the same with death. So when I was reading this, I was thinking of, there's a story in the Bhagavatam, or a section that, I mean, so much of the Bhagavatam really is about death. Obviously, this beginning of the second canto is Parikshit Maharaj inquires from Shukadev Goswami, and it's a celebrated occasion that he has 7 days to live, and it's celebrated that he's come in the way that this verse is speaking, in a way that's so bold and unafraid of death and cutting off all attachment. And that's first of all celebrated and then spoken about. But there's a story of Jet Bharat, which I thought was so closely related to this point of attachment, and similar to the story I shared in the beginning, of even someone who is really so close to be almost there, practicing spiritual life so strongly, at the last stage of life, you know, such a great devotee. But material attachments can creep in at any point in our life, and even up to the last moment. So Jet Bharat was, he was the emperor of the world, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with the story, but if you hear it in terms of this, basically, attachment, material attachments, it might be a little bit different for you. So he was the emperor of the world, and he retired to the forest for spiritual practice, so he was on the right path. He was so close, but he became attached to a deer, as the story goes, and he's spending time with that deer. He gradually resulted in Bharat becoming neglectful of his spiritual practices and his meditation, and it became a distraction. So unfortunately, he placed his affection to the deer rather towards the Supreme Lord at a very critical stage at the end of his life. And as a result, he was born in the deer body the next life, very similar to how whatever attachment the old Vaishnava had in the beginning story, he kept that attachment in the form of a dog. But being such a great Vaishnava, he was able to remember his prior life. And he was fully conscious of the Lord. And after his life as a deer, he remembered his fall down, his wasted opportunity. He took birth as Jet Bharat. And he decided that even though internally he was fully conscious and fully understanding of his previous births and a devotee, he decided to be externally dumb, deaf, and blind. And why did he do this? This is very important. Krishna gave him the intelligence to remember that even though you were so close, you held on to one attachment, and this attachment caused you to come back again and again. And because of this, he took such an extreme measure, really extreme measure, because he didn't want to fall in the association that might make him attached again. He didn't want to become attached and entangle the material world again, because he saw how close he came. He saw just from one attachment that honestly can be seen as an act of compassion for seeing a deer who needs help without a mother and caring for this deer as an act of compassion. But where did he... The line wasn't drawn at the appropriate place. He didn't draw the line at the right place to say, this is Jiva Doya, this is compassion for a living entity, but I must also take care of myself, and I have my own, I'm on my path back to Godhead right now. I have a few short years left, months, days even, who knows. So I have to focus on this first. He didn't draw the correct line, and therefore the attachment to the deer grew more than the attachment to Krishna. It grew more than his resolve. And so, as a result, people mistreated Jet Bharat. And King Rahugana, the story goes, was on this pilgrimage, and one of his palanquin carriers was not able to continue. So they come by where Jet Bharat was sitting, and they said, okay, you've come to, the king is requesting you. And I actually remember this story mostly from the puppet show, as I do with many of our stories. But so he's there, and he's walking in all funny, trying to avoid the ants, not wanting to hurt any living entity, because what a Vaishnava. You know, that's the compassionate element. He was there with the deer, it was taken too far, but that compassionate element still must be there. And just at that time, or when he was doing this, the king got down and became upset. What are these irregular movements that you're doing? So Jedbar listened, and he gave a very beautiful and very philosophical answer. This is quite a famous verse in the fifth canto. He said, "You are thinking now that you are the king and master, and thus you are trying to order me. This is incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today you are a king, and I'm your servant. But tomorrow the position may be changed, and you may be my servant, and I your master. These are temporary circumstances created by providence." Due to his being able to see, which this is what the Bhagavad Gita gives us insight to, we're not able to see our previous lives and have this kind of macro view of death, of changing bodies, in a very macro style of just seeing it, this life, not so focused on my attachments, my day-to-day activities, my problems right here, right now, just very micro view. So the Bhagavad Gita gives us this insight into Jedbharat. Who is able to see this? And like I was saying earlier, if we don't have the experience of death or understanding that, yes, we're changing bodies, how can we accept it? So we have to hear and see from those who do have that experience. And luckily we have these personalities in the Bhagavatam. And in that purport, Prabhupada comments, in this life one may be a king, in the next life one may be a dog, according to karma. The spirit soul is in deep, deep slumber, caused by the force of material nature. Without self-realization and knowledge, conditional life continues, and thus one falsely claims himself a king, a servant, a cat, or a dog. And Jedbar also remained very calm and unafraid of death. He taught us this point, which elaborates here in the verse. One should be bold enough not to be afraid of death. I really love that line, be bold enough. How was he bold enough when he was captured by the dacoids who were claimed to be worshippers of Kali, to sacrifice him to Kali? He wasn't afraid, he just went with it, went with the plan of the Lord. He didn't fight back. And he took this intention to be unable to speak, see, or hear in order not to become attached. But does that mean that he's going to continue with that, not to defend his own life? That has nothing to do with material attachments. So the fact that he didn't fight back shows how fixed he was, that Krishna is taking care of him. It just wasn't an external thing. He wasn't making a show of just not speaking. And so Jedbar remained calm, and it's because he cut that knot of bodily identification. He didn't identify with the body because he knew from his previous births what had happened, that he's not his body. He had that experience and that memory ingrained into his mind. And because of that, he was taken care of. He was taken care of the Lord. He had full faith. And so I want to finish by just stating, this is the Bhagavatam's perspective, and we can try to apply it in our own life. But at the same time, it's such a difficult application to understand that death is coming, and to cut off all material attachment, and all attachments that go along with that, and be unafraid of death. I mean, this is the reason we come back again and again and again. It's a deep-rooted issue, not just from this birth. From birth after birth after birth, it's conditioning for so long. It's that it takes 21 days in general to build a habit. 21 days, and imagine a habit that's built from not 21 days, not 21 years, not 21 lifetimes, so many lifetimes, such an ingrained, deep ingrained habit of material attachments, of choosing attachments to things pertaining to the material world rather than things pertaining to the spiritual world, rather than practices pertaining to worshiping the Lord. And especially we're on the cusp of, we understand, we have this knowledge that what happens after death, and everything I'm saying, everybody here already knows. But the practical application is still difficult. Many of us are in the Grihastha ashram. There is a natural attachment to our family and so on and so forth, which is, of course, necessary. We can't be completely detached. So what's the remedy? what is the remedy? The analogy is of a dirty water in a pot. The pot is full of dirty water. But if you take a hose, pure, clean water, you put it in the pot on high pressure, and you keep going and going and going, eventually all the dirty water will get cleansed out. It will be flushed out and flushed away. And that's the process of Krishna consciousness. We put in our practice, our sadhana, our chanting of the holy name, and we do so more attentively, more without offenses, the cleaner the new water comes in, the more surcharged it is, the more the pressure is, and the more it cleans out the stale, dirty, murky water that's already there. The focus has to be on increasing attachment to Krishna. Ashakti, the focus, the attachment to Krishna. But there's a process. It starts with faith, initial faith. Sadhu Sangha, practice of devotional service. Anartha Nivritti, firm steadfastness. Taste, and then attachment to Krishna. And then we can really progress into higher and higher stages of devotional life. So I'll finish with a little quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Ask the question, how do you give up these deep-rooted attachments? How do we give them up? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, if you wish to triumph over attraction and repulsion, if you wish to triumph over attraction and repulsion, then you should remember this. By becoming attracted to the transcendental holy name, you will be delivered from these attachments. By becoming attracted to the transcendental holy name, that's the clean water, that's the high-pressure water coming from the hose. The transcendental holy name is the most pure of anything. It's Krishna himself and all his energies, all his potencies put into the holy name. By becoming attracted to this holy name, then your deep-rooted attachments will go and you will be delivered from these attachments. And he continued on, why would you accept the poverty of a life without hearing and chanting about Krishna, your only wealth? Why would you accept the poverty of a life without hearing and chanting about Krishna, your only wealth? Jack, thank you. If there's any questions or comments, please go ahead. I saw Nandini Kishore's hand. Oh, anyway, we'll go around the room. It doesn't matter.
Thank you. Varnashram, the Varnashram system allows one to gradually prepare for death. You know, the process of Varnashram allows that really. And so that's a system that's already been established. We follow it, that will help. Also one quick comment about that story you brought up. There is a similar story in the Bhagavatam with Vishwamitra and his son and Varuna. His son was Rohita, and I think he didn't have a kid, and Varuna allowed him to get a son, and then he says, after I get a son, I will sacrifice it to you. And so when the son was born, he was making all the same excuses like you were talking about.
Thank you. Thank you for the comment and story. Yeah, please come to Darshan.
Thank you for such a nice class.
Thank you.
The story of Kailash is similar, but when you said it, it really affected me much more, the way you said it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you asked, what would you do if Narad Muni asks you today? And I really appreciated that point. But I think this moment I won't be able to go, how you asked.
Right.
Because even Maharaj Parikshit got 7 days. So there's little notice.
Yeah.
And is that your thinking too? That there should be little notice?
Yeah.
As opposed to...
Yeah. Sometimes we're fortunate enough to get little notice, sometimes we're not. But at the same time, Krishna sees our endeavors. That's the key. As long as we try our very best. And I was thinking yesterday, how do we know if we're trying our very best? And I thought, just by asking that question means I'm probably not trying my very best. Usually when you try your very best, you really know you're trying your very best. And when you do that, Krishna sees your endeavor and he gives you enough opportunity to come back to him. And of course, there's no loss or diminution in spiritual practice. The bank account adds, but it doesn't decrease. What you do, Krishna sees that and it stays there forever. That's confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Thank you. There's Mother Sukhita.
Hari Bhav. Thank you. I was thinking of the verse, Bhakti Mam Abhijanati Yavanyas Chasmi Tattaha Tattamam Tattadonyat Vaj Vishite Tadamantaram, that one can understand the Supreme Personality of God as He is only by devotional service. Mm-hmm. When it comes to full realization of such devotion, mm-hmm. you can enter the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking how so many times it's our service that saves us, even in this material world. Like mm-hmm. some big upset, you know, some big catastrophe in your life, mm-hmm. and you're just kind of floundering, but you do your service. You know, mm-hmm. that is one way for us to enter in. It's like we're practicing right now, you know, making garlands for Krishna, and the next life will just make a smooth transition into the spiritual world. And I was also thinking how Prabhupada, when the devotees asked him one time, Prabhupada said, you know, he had to be 100% Krishna conscious before he could go back home, back to God, and they were discouraged, like, oh, you know. And it kept on going down, you know, 90%. You know, I think he got to maybe like 70%. So, you know, Prabhupada's mercy and just the way he, I don't know if all Vaishnavas are, if they do what we do in ISKCON.
It's really nice thoughts. Sticking it again to that story, I think Madhumati had the next question. One, a few devotees in the back. We'll get around. But just on that point that, we have so much safety nets in place. We have so much support in place for going back to Godhead. And we take advantage of the support and we serve humbly and will be in good hands. Please.
Ram Govinda, you were mentioning about, you asked Maharaj about how to preach to the college students and something relevant, and what else was the
relatable.
Other? Relatable. How would you bring this point of death to a student? I mean, we sometimes go to Santa Fe College and and we approach students with different things, you know, somehow they'll get their attention. And so if I was to approach a student, and I'm asking if you were to approach a student and bring this point up about death, how would you do it?
It's true. it's quite sensitive, and it can seem quite like, someone comes up to you, you know you're going to die, you're going to be like, get out of my face, come on. I don't want this energy around me. But I remember at that same time we were speaking about this relevant, relatable topic, he said there's a group in England that, I think I mentioned this in an earlier class, that do a lot of college preaching. They're called the Krishna Conscious Society. It's a national kind of branch of, they have it. Many universities, all very close by in London area and things. They run similar ways. And so their first session is called, what would you do if you had 24 hours to live? So it's a little more provocative. And I think bringing up the question of death in a kind of a provocative, not a very like, you're going to die, we're all going to die kind of way, but just an interesting question style. There's actually, yesterday when I was studying for this, the Krishna House does every Tuesday a program called Taco Tuesday, and it's like a discussion-based program. And the topic yesterday, the flyer, it says, you were born to die, or something like that. And then the tagline was, Benjamin Franklin said there's only two things guaranteed in life, death and taxes. Like a little play on humor. But it's, and taxes. So it's basically, we were all, if we have the, how do I say this? If we can think about this topic of death in, you know, a way that doesn't totally scare us, people who aren't accustomed to that, they also can. I think this is a matter of bringing it up in a way that's not too harsh, or where another person is at.
I don't like the way you said, what would you do if you don't have
Yeah. A lot of they would go around the campus and ask that first to people and get their comments on it, and then give them a flyer. We have this program. Yeah, you know, it's going to be a free meal or whatever. Come listen to what we have to say. Yeah, we could be there too. Yeah? Yeah. I think you will be. It's a good question. Yes, sorry, there's a few more questions here.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My name is Ingrid. I'm a new devotee of 2 years. And I am 66 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, I'm coming from a Christian background, mm-hmm. so I'm very familiar with the scriptures and spirituality and mm-hmm. life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my own survey of happiness in the world. Even the very rich person, down to the poor person, happiness is only for a temporary time. And like you said, on occasion of a new baby, a new job. Now, I have this question. Right, I'm excited about the Vedic scriptures because I'm learning things that's out of this world. And I ask myself, why is it we live every day, we learn all this wonderful thing from Prabhupada and all the gurus and the spiritual masters of another planet, another life where the happiness is permanent to be with Krishna? And why would a Vaishnava, somebody who have accomplished all the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, why will they give up the opportunity to be with Krishna and want to stay back in this hellish world? I'm concerned, why is that?
That's a really very good question. And I think the fact that you're asking that question means that you're better prepared than most to take advantage of the present opportunity, because to recognize the fact that, yes, we have such knowledge to give us everlasting happiness, original happiness, really. And we're so close, but we may not take it. There's a few answers. One is the laws of nature is guna, which is, sorry, the modes of material nature. And we're constantly 24 hours, 7 days a week, under the influence of the modes of material nature. And we are being dictated by those modes. It's almost like we're a puppet on a string, so to say. If we don't practice to transcend those modes, we're being directed by them. And when you're directed by that, even with knowledge, these modes are strong. We have to have practice that goes along with knowledge as well. And that's where practice comes into play. Another reason is sangha, it's association. And this also association falls in modes of material nature, association of mode of goodness, and mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. But even if we have the highest knowledge and a resolve to practice that knowledge, or even are practicing, certain association can hold us back, or certain association may not be strong enough to take us where we have to go. It may not be bad association, but it may but not be strong enough. So we're constantly seeking association that is really, really trying to this be our last birth. If that's the association we're holding on to, then that's a really, really good way to make sure that we don't come back in the next life. Thank you. Yes.
You want to take another question?
Of course, please.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So what I have difficulties with is duty and attachment.
Okay.
Sometimes the mind is so tricky that it will say, oh, it's your duty. But actually it's hiding being attachment that we falsely identify as duty.
Mm-hmm.
Like towards our family, towards our husband, towards so many things.
Mm-hmm.
So I always had difficulties doing duty and being detached.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest?
Oh, man. Asking the wrong person. I should be asking you. Oh, my. You started your question, I go, oh man, this is, if you open it up to the floor, what do I suggest? Duty and attachment. I think I'm a big fan of asking the right questions. I think when you ask the right question, it gives a certain insight to the mental state of mind. And I think the fact that you're able to discern and thinking what is duty, what is detachment, is the first step, that you're able to see that. You know, and I think that is the difficulty of trying to get out of the bondage in this material world. Maybe my best answer, but it pertains to the answer Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And when we increase faith and attachment to the holy name, and not just, that's just a statement, I guess, attachment to the holy name, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said this, and he sat under a tree, and when it rained, he held an umbrella or a hut, and he chanted 3 lakhs of Maha Mantra every day, or, you know, altogether 1 billion or 10 billion, some it's an extraordinary number of the holy names of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It took him about 9 to 10 years. He had this vrata, the same vrata of Haridas Thakur. And when that straw hut, and it would rain, and the water would come underneath, he wouldn't get outside and fix the hut so it's dry. He would just hold an umbrella. And so when he says attachment to the holy name, strong, deep attachment to the holy name, that's coming from so much experience, so much realization. He's saying that from, I mean, you can imagine 22 hours a day, a chant Hare Krishna for 9 years. And not our chanting and just japa talking and every now and then on the phone, like fully focused. And that faith in the holy name really is the only way that we can discern, or we can separate our attachment from our duty, our dharma from our bondage. And I think that the easiest method to solve any issue, especially this issue of attachment, is really just chanting the holy name very, very sincerely, with really deep attachment and really absorption. Because it's difficult otherwise. On our own strength, we can't do it. We can't sever it. You know, we're devotee or Vaishnavas, and we're in the ashram to have families. There has to be attachment, obviously, and this duty. There's just no way on our own strength we can separate the two unless we really take shelter of the holy name. And that's why we have to surrender, because if we don't, we can't do it on our own strength.
Yeah, I remember something Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, because he had so many children. He said, actually, these are not my children. They are Krishna children, therefore I'm taking care of them.
Yeah.
So this is maybe a way to give a transcendental view to what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I only give an answer based off whatever. I have no experience based on my answer, but if anyone else here has more experience with this question, please feel free to share and create some discussion.
It's coming.
Anyone else would like to share? Okay, thank you very much. No, I've got a question. Yeah. No, please say something.
Just one thing. Everybody.
It's on. Speak close.
Probably heard it, but when they were saying about the percentages, probably saying. And the devotee said, well, we can't do that 100%, and probably said, okay, 90. We can, probably kept going down to 70, but later he said, I have the key to the back door.
Yeah.
Everybody's heard that, I guess. In other words, special mercy we're getting from Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Not that we can flaunt it, but we have to surrender also, but still, we got special mercy.
Yes.
Especially if you're born in the moon.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Everybody gets it anyway.